Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. And I don't have any opening comments, so I will turn it over to you, Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert.
Good morning, and thank you. I'm just going to update you on last week on what I... I'm going to hold.
Before we go into opening comments, would you please join me in pledging allegiance?
Sorry.
No offense.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Further evidence that it takes a team.
Good morning, everyone. I do have an opening comment or things to update somebody on. I think it's of interest. I was asked to serve on a NARUC DOE cybersecurity baseline committee, and we have been meeting for over a year. And last week, Thursday and Friday, we attended in person. We've been doing some of it over Zoom, in person, after a year to finalize some of our baseline requirements. And these are for electrical distribution utilities and the Distributive Energy Resources, DER. And we're using the word cybersecurity baselines deliberately because we want to think of it more than best practices. But this is not a federal regulation. We're not making it a mandate. The steering committee was a mixed group, a very interesting group. There were two of us as regulators on the group, utility and DRE representative, cybersecurity experts, and other stakeholders to assist us with these baselines. And what we're hoping now is we submitted our final project to the project team. The project team will, in the next 2 months, finalize, and then these guidelines will be out. And it's really a guideline for each commission to look at it and to see how they want to, if they want to implement it in their cybersecurity guidelines. I'm proud to say here at the commission, we have our resource planning where we do meet with our utilities annually to look at cyber and physical security. This is just phase one, and we're hoping to have these guidelines out in the next couple of months, and then phase two will be more of a template on if they want to implement these guidelines, how to do it. So this has been a remarkable experience for me, especially working with cybersecurity experts in the area on what's going on nationally, regionally, and locally. So it was a good experience, and I appreciate this opportunity to be a part of this steering committee. Other than that, I have nothing else.
And I'm going to pass a note to staff here, but you can continue, Commissioner Fedorchak.
Okay. I don't have any opening comments, but thank you for that summary, Sherry.
Thanks.
So there was something with the minutes, and I can't think of what it was. So I'm going to delay on the motion for approving the minutes. But as for the consent calendar, I would like to remove SH1 to the regular agenda. But other than that, I would move that the rest of the consent calendar be approved.
Which one were you moving to the?
SH1.
SH1, okay. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. And once again, to prove the importance of a good team, in the previous minutes, we approved that we were going to have kind of an employee event and chili and stuff on February 14th. And about the time we gaveled out, it was realized that it's Ash Wednesday. And we can schedule outside of open meetings. And so that has since been changed to the 20th. So I just want to clarify, it's the 20th. But our minutes say it's the 14th because that is what we did in the meeting. It's a change that has occurred since those minutes.
And no one wanted my Norwegian fish chili.
I wasn't going to say it, but yeah.
It's quite delicious, but.
It is, but it was that was only part of it. Ash Wednesday was part of it too. So with that, I move that we approve the minutes as printed.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, then moving into the regular agenda part. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in TrackPhone Wireless Incorporated, designated eligible carrier, application case number PU-24-19.
Second.
By the way, both of these, my comments are going to read almost exactly the same because the applications are quite similar. On January 9th, TrackPhone Wireless filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers, which is also known as Lifeline-only ETC designation. TrackPhone proposes to provide wireless prepaid Lifeline universal services by using its own facilities. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are, number one, whether the applicant is qualified, number two, what ETC universal support area should be designated, and number three is designation of the applicant as an ETC in the public interest. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by March 22nd, and if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine this matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And next, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Assurance Wireless USA LP, designated eligible carrier, applicant case number PU-2422.
Second.
On January 11th, just a few days later, Assurance Wireless filed an application for designation as an ETC, again for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers, also known as Lifeline-only ETC. Assurance proposes to provide wireless prepaid Lifeline universal services by using its own facilities. The issues to be considered in the proceeding are the same. Is the applicant qualified? What universal service support area should be designated, and is designation of the applicant as an ETC in the public interest? Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing, and once again, persons desiring a hearing must file a written request. Comments or requests for hearings must be received by the same date, March 22nd. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing. I'm just going to say, I don't know how many of these ETCs we have already chasing basically the same fairly limited number in North Dakota of qualified consumers. And I think it's been an ongoing concern of mine because they nibble away at the profits of the carriers that serve everyone and provide most of the backbone of the infrastructure. And I think right now there's quite a surge because I think there's some support that is going to be going away to that outside of this program that recipients of this kind of service qualify for. And I'm worried that there's going to be a big surge of trying to get in and get these customers based on what could be offered now. And then some of that other support goes away and these customers struggle to pay that bill. And so I hope folks aren't being misled. That's why we have the hearings and the opportunity, or at least the filings. So we'll see where it goes. But it sure seems strange with the number of people who would even qualify for this, how we have company after company coming in for ETC status.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Chair Christman. The consent item that was moved over to the regular will be SH3. So I'll start with my first one. I move the commission issue a notice of hearing in Northern States Power Company Vance Prudence Monticello Nuclear Extension application case number PU23-64.
Second.
A hearing on the application in case number PU23-64 is scheduled for May 29th, 2024 at 8:30 a.m. Central Time in the Commission Hearing Room on the 12th floor of the State Capitol. On February 3rd, 2023, Northern States Power, NSP, filed an application for their Advanced Determination of Prudence, ADP, for the extension of their Monticello Generating Plant beyond its current 2030 retirement date. The proposed life extension requires investment to expand the existing spent fuel storage on site, as well as a license renewal from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are whether NSP's proposed resource extension is prudent, and whether the commission should grant NSP an advanced determination of prudence. Again, this hearing for this application is scheduled for May 29th, 2024 at 8:30 Central Time in the Commission. Just a little bit about this. They're looking to extend it to 2050. And the cost they have to look at when looking at the cost of this, the subsequent license renewal cost is approximately, when I read the ADP, is $25 million. And they're also looking at expanding the existing storage. And according to the ADP that I looked at, that cost is approximately $72 million. So those are just some of the brief details on this ADP.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I just am going to say this and another case that we have coming up, I think, have some connections that I find interesting. And the other one is 23-364 that has to do with NSP's Department of Energy settlement on nuclear waste. And we have a informal coming up on that later on in the administrative portion of the meeting. I'm going to be asking if we can alter that time or date some, because I have a conflict then and I'd like to participate if possible. But my concern is in that case. Let me step back from that case. My understanding of the history of this was the federal government, I don't know if it was DOE, who kind of enticed utility companies into believing they would have a nuclear waste storage facility by a certain date, and they failed. In fact, we're further away from the national storage facility now than we were 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we thought it was about 5 years from completion. Mm-hmm. And so because they failed the utility companies, they have been issuing payments to make up for their costs of that storage. And it seems to me in that other case that we have the informal coming up on, they're kind of basically giving it to the most of it or a lot of it to the neighbors. And then in this case, we have all these costs that they're going to need to collect from the customers to pay for the storage. And so I hope I can am able to participate in that informal. And somehow or another, I have these disconnecting things that we're giving away the money we get from the feds, but then we're coming over here for help from the ratepayers to pay the costs that the feds, I thought, are supposed to be paying. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out, that this is a very complex thing, and I thought that these companies are getting some federal money to offset at least some of those costs that you were appropriately highlighting.
Yeah.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order in MDU's Montana Dakota Utility Company Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Rates, case number PU-23-340.
Second.
On October 31st, MDU filed changes to rates under its Renewable Resource Cost Adjustment Rate 55 tariff to be rendered on or after February 1st, 2024. So on November 29th, the commission issued a notice of opportunity and no responses were received. The notice identified the issues to be considered before us are whether the investment and associated costs for the resources qualify for recovery, whether their incurred costs are reasonable and prudent, and whether the rate adjustments are consistent with the terms of MDU's tariff. On the 29th of January, MDU did file a revised renewable resource adjustment. And so these costs, the updated rates reflected projected costs related to MDU's investment in Thunder Spirit Wind Project 1 and 2, the Cedar Hill Wind Project, the Diamond Willow Wind Project, and subsequent repowering that we went through and approved. The updated rates also reflected a projected under-recovered revenue base as of December 31st as a result of a higher-than-projected operating cost and lower production tax credits and lower-than-expected usage. So going through all of that, the staff scrutinized it, and with the filed revised information, the billing impact of the updated renewable resource cost adjustment rate on the bill of a residential customer using 800 kilowatts is an increase of $1.51 per month. And based on this, the investments and associated costs qualify for recovery, are reasonable and prudent, and the rates do comply with the tariff.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you. So the consent item that was moved to the regular item is as follows. I move the commission approve Northern States Power Company's annual update of cogeneration and small power production rate schedules effective March 1st, 2024 in Northern States Power Company cogeneration small power production rates, case number PU-24-16.
Second.
On January 2nd, NSP filed its annual update of cogeneration and small power production rate schedule as required under the Federal Utilities Regulation Policy Act of 1979, or what we refer to as PURPA, and Commission rules. The rate schedule provide standard rates for purchase of energy and generating capacity from small customer-owned qualifying facilities as defined under PURPA. And what happens is they have 7 customers that are on this rate. So they get the filing on how much they're generating, and the filing that they submitted is as follows. The filing revised tariff rates for NSP's net energy billing services purchase and sales billing at the time of day purchase service. The metering charges are unchanged, and the energy payments and capacity charges were a mix of increases and decreases. As I stated, the number of customers on the company's net energy billing services remained at 7 in the current year, and the total excess kilowatts sold to NSP increased from 7,919 to 8,833. So it was very minimal. So under this federal regulation, they spend a lot of time gathering the data, which reflects 7 customers are on this renewable. And it's less than to power, it's less than, the increase was less than 1,000, which is less than a household. So there's a lot of work going into this federal regulation. And I guess based on what, not I guess, I know that based on what NSP has submitted that we approve their filing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, and I don't have any quarrel with recommendation here or anything. I guess, and we've done basically this in the past and didn't think too much of it because it's almost trivial. But after sitting through 2 days of SPP meetings and spending a bulk of the time as an organization chasing after federal dollars that they're borrowing to entice us to do what they want, we're to the point of allocating projects that have not even been imagined yet. We're allocating the cost for projects that are imagined and including that future projects will have the same allocation when the future projects aren't even dreamt up yet. We don't know if we're talking billion-dollar projects or $10 billion projects. And so I was thinking about this. So this requirement comes from Washington, D.C. and PURPA. PURPA is almost 50 years old. So after 45 years among the North Dakota base, we're up to 7 customers now using it. Not 7 out of 1,000 or 10,000. 7 out of almost 100,000. And as you correctly said, those 7, the energy that they're feeding back for this enormously important program is not enough to power 1 average residential customer through the year. If they happen to be producing at the right times, it wouldn't even be enough. I mean, that much energy, it has to be in the hundreds of dollars, certainly less than $1,000, what they're producing here. I will guarantee you, NSP is spending thousands keeping track of all this. We waste our time taking care of all the filings, and I've just made it worse by not just letting it go on consent. But my God, how long do we just keep ignoring this? And so I guess I'm just hoping that we all maybe, I know I'm going to try and visit with some of my other friends that are in the utility regulation business and see, like, are you getting such dismal results out of this too? And at some point, Congress needs to actually do their job and take an action instead of just ignoring federal programs that are nearly a half a century old and aren't working, aren't doing anything, aren't accomplishing anything except wasting money. And so that's why I wanted to bring it off of consent and just vent.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That ends my portfolio.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
All right. I move the commission issue a notice of filing and notice of a public hearing in Cerulean GTL North Dakota Inc. Cerulean GTL North Dakota Project, Williams County Siting Application, case number PU-23-325.
Second.
So on October 5th, Cerulean GTL North Dakota Inc. filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility to construct two natural gas liquid hydrocarbon energy conversion facilities, each with an associated 100 megawatt steam powered electric energy conversion facility in Williams County, North Dakota. A public hearing on the application in this case is scheduled for June 17th at the Grand Williston Hotel and Conference Center in Williston. So that promises to be a really interesting hearing. This project, and I haven't fully digested to completely understand this project, but it includes, like I said, two gas to liquid facilities, a phase one and a phase two, will be on a single site. It's in a location west of Williston. And then those facilities will generate excess steam as part of their process. And that excess steam will be used for power generation. So the products that it's going to produce include something called base oils. They're a primary component of many premium lubricants like synthetic motor oil. Their primary market is lubricant manufacturers who combine them with other additives to produce a saleable product. They'll produce ultra low sulfur diesel, and this is going to be a premium quality synthetic middle distillate. This is a drop-in alternative for petroleum-based diesel. It'll produce naphtha, which is a mixture of hydrocarbons that may either be sold to petroleum refineries or chemical plants for further processing, or used as a diluent to reduce the viscosity of bitumen. Not sure what that is. But bitumen from the oil sands is too viscous to transport via pipeline efficiently, so they add this. They would add this naphtha into that to help it transport more efficiently. And then it would produce other hydrocarbon products such as aviation fuel and liquefied petroleum gas. That would be in phase two. So then the excess heat generated by conversion of natural gas to liquid hydrocarbons would produce electricity. They will also have a carbon capture for off-site third-party sequestration of carbon dioxide. So it's just a multi-phased, multi-product project that we will be looking at. I'm sure you're going to want to know the price or the investment, and I'll look that up and save that for the Q&A. But anyway, the project will be the project hearing will be June 17th. In Williston, where we'll have a siting hearing on this interesting new project.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none.
I would venture to say that the investment is significantly more than the cumulative total of all of Xcel's North Dakota customers using small power production.
Oh, yes, I think that's a safe analysis, Randy, or assumption. It looks to me, as I see this, that the project is approximately $3.2 billion with a B dollars.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's been exciting, interesting hearing.
And that's just phase one. So, wow. Probably the biggest project we've ever considered.
Maybe. Is this the first one hitting the B mark?
No, we've had Bs.
Yeah, prior to my time, but I was just curious on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Be right up there.
Huh?
Be right up there.
Yeah. All right.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That's it for me.
Thank you. And a few announcements I'd like to make. This afternoon at 2 o'clock, we have a special commission meeting. Actually, this one will only include Commissioner Haugenhoffert and I, and then as well as decision maker Tim Dawson on that one. That will be down in the Pioneer Room. That's on the Summit case. February 16th is a Friday, and we have a formal hearing on Basin Electric's Roundup to Coomer Ridge 345 kV transmission line. That's case number PU-23-361. Roundup, for anyone listening that's interested, is at near Johnson Corner, east of Watford City. And Coomer Ridge is down near Kildare. I think I, unless I exchange those two, one for the other, but that's the, it's kind of from Kildare to the Johnson Corner area. That will be at the High Plains Community Center in Kildare. It's at 9:30 Central Time, 8:30 Mountain Time, so we're going to have to get an early start on that day. And I also just want to point out that our next regular commission meeting is February 21st at the regular time, and it's on a Wednesday. That concludes the announcements. We will take some questions from the press in a break here. And so at this point, we will stand in recess.